through similarity or harmony or affinity, that we shall relate them by thinking meticulously and entirely, and let more and more light flash forth until we have entered the realm of pure reason. I hope that is, you know, clear. All right. What else?
Continuing on with the theme of the vagus nerve, Heike responded, vagus word comes from wandering around, interesting.
Uh-huh.
In addition to its vegetative function, it is involved and transmits in the motor control of the larynx, throat, and upper esophagus. And she adds, and the lyre is one of the oldest instruments, allegedly invented by Hermes, used to accompany lyrics.
Lyrics, yes, indeed. Okay, good research there, good. Thank you, Heike. You must have some work in healing, it seems, and maybe some fifth ray somewhere, it seems. Okay, that's illuminating, and thank you. Thank you for those thoughts.
And yeah, we're continuing on in this theme. Okay. Manish writes, in healing autism, we clean the vagus nerve.
Okay, now autism, you know, I just have a layman's knowledge of it, but it seems to result in a kind of a quite severe withdrawal from contact, and in a certain type of almost, for some type, super mental specialization. You know, maybe you saw the film Rain Man, was it with Dustin Hoffman a long time ago? And he played the role of an autistic brother who was, in a way, a savant. He was a genius along certain very specialized lines and out of contact on many others. So I'm wondering about the contact factor involving the vagus nerve. In Rain Man, someone dropped on the floor a bunch of toothpicks, and he looked at it, and he said, something like, 243 toothpicks. That was instantaneous on his part. And someone questioned him, and he said, no, exactly 243 toothpicks. I'm making up the number, but it was in the 200s or something of that nature. So there are unusual capacities of a specialized nature, but also a shrinking away from and a withdrawal from many normal life circumstances. And of course, music and the lyre and the harp and all that can put a person back in touch with things they have long forgotten or never were able to relate to. The whole idea of the seven rays and the lyre and the harp of Apollo as well are coming in here. So thanks for that connection. Lyrics, very interesting. Lyra, lyrics, and the cleaning of the vagus nerve in the case of autism. Fascinating subjects. Thank you. What else?
As we continue on in this line, and Veronica writes, if I remember well, vagus is a portal center that was made for the soul to escape in death. That happens when a man had evolved but isn't evolved enough to escape from the heart.
Okay, so DK gives, you may be correct on that. He gives three portals of escape, right? the solar plexus, the heart, and the crown. He discusses those three. But maybe there is a reference to a portal regarding the vagus nerve as well that you are seeming to remember. I cannot say, because maybe the book that I've read the least or pondered the least is Esoteric Healing. Maybe that's where you would find it, perhaps. Do you think so? Maybe from that book. I'm not sure. But interesting thought, and thank you, Anne Veronica.
I think it might be the spleen, which the spleen, the stomach, the intestines, as well as the throat, larynx, and so forth, they're all related by the vagus nerve.
Okay, well, something is drawing our attention to this particular nerve and to the, now, you know, we have to see what kind of relationship we can find between vega and the vagus nerve. It is associated with magical incantation. And the and probably with playing upon the seven rays. And I think it's one of the major stars in our seven solar systems. But its exact placement, I mean, we could say the throat center, or we could say the head center. Those are the two candidates, at least in my mind. With Sirius, again, either the Ajna center, but that could be taken by Procyon, or the head center. Maybe, interesting. Is Vega a somewhat blue star, so much bluish white, something like that? I wonder if I may have lost my bearings there. Here it is. Okay, and I'll go here, Vega, solar luminosity. And we'll see it has a somewhat bluish tint. And you know, here's something, well, it depends maybe on the filter you're using to photograph it, but there's some kind of predominating blue. Now, the reason I bring that up is that in the inner life, which DK references when talking about the appearance of the chakras, silvery blue is the color of the throat center for man. And I'm looking here at a star that seems to have exactly that quality. And, you know, it may somehow connect with the primordial ray of our solar system. I mean, I haven't put all these things together yet, but let's just say that to have Sirius represent the crown, possibly, Procyon the Ajna center of this cosmic logos, and Vega the throat center, and Altair the eagle rising at the base of the spine, and our sun, of course, the heart center. So the throat center would be Vega. So our sun, the heart center. Maybe Fomalo, maybe, this is conjecture, representing the solar plexus. And the Alpha and Beta Centauri, the sexual center. And as I said, Altair, the base of the spine, maybe that is a configuration that is worth researching. Okay. And it would certainly make sense that the enchanting qualities coming forth from the lyre and the lyrics that arise from that kind of creativity could be associated with Vega. Could be. Even and why then would it be brighter than Sirius? That's the question. Well, maybe in our cosmic logos, local cosmic logos, its development signals that the throat center and the solar plexus center, let's say, would be more developed than either the ajna or the head center, perhaps. So these are, you know, wide-ranging speculations, but they put us into the spiritual numerals. The spiritual numerals as they apply to the solar systemic and local cosmic system. And spiritual numerals are numbers, notes, colors. Those are the spiritual numerals as Blavatsky is considering them. Okay, so let's...
And we're continuing on with this line. Chris writes, Vega was the North Star during the time of the ancient Egyptians and their great incantations. It returns as the North Star every 26,000 years. Vega will be our North Star again in 12,000 years.
Okay, that is interesting. And you know, when we talk about Egyptian times, the occult view on that centers, well, around 75,000 years ago, which is a much larger figure than usually given in contemporary history. So in the great Platonic year of conventionally 25,000, but really a bit longer, there are going to be about three gyrations of the axis going through the various stars that can be aligned as the North Star. So there will be repetitions over a period of approximately 75,000 years. Something will, you know, let's just say, let's make it easy and say that from looking backward immediately 25,000 years ago, well, actually we will have to take Vega and subtract 12,500 years ago. I mean, you know, just speculating here. Then add another 25,000, add another 25,000 going backwards for the Platonic year. And it's interesting to consider the types of civilizations which existed when any particular star was a North Star, and whether there is an ascending spiral that can be noticed with human progression. So, you know, we've had quite a number of civilizations, root races, sub-races, and so forth, and the same North Star has characterized a number of them. It would be interesting, if we could, to compare what it was about those cultures or civilizations which shows the similarity. And if we could only go back, what did you say? 12,000 years ahead, I think you said, and suppose we go back another 12,500 or 13,000 years, what civilization prevailed at that time? Was this the end of the sinking of Atlantis in terms of the islands that is Poseidonis one of them? You know, there was some kind of dual remnant of Atlantis, which was not the Atlantis of which the United States was the center. It was much closer to Europe, to Greece, and so forth. And there was some kind of inundation that occurred at that time. Anyway, to trace the history, which we can't really do, when various stars were repetitively the North Star. See, when was the last time that Polaris was the North Star, maybe 25, 26,000 years ago. What transpired, you see? Anyway, that's a line of research when we know more. So thanks for your figures on that. Appreciate that.
Michael.
Yes, Tuya, yes.
Can I add something?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Very interesting. This, again, a little bit from mythological point of view. The Vega, it has a relationship with the law in that sense that there are these legends about them, again, which seems to be very common, that there are royal beings and then mortals, and then the royal being is falling in love with the mortal. This same story goes with the Pleiades. It has continuously the earth in this kind of expression of the mortal. So in Vega is also that story related to the mortal shepherd, and very often they are always shepherds. The princess Vega is falling in love with that shepherd on earth, and the shepherd of course is on different rank than this princess. Anyway, the king, the father of the princess, do not want this to happen, but it is happening, and that's why there comes a punishment to the royal being, because she is not taking care of her responsibilities. But there is, like, once a year comes the crows or ravens or magpies to cover the sky when the mortal and the royal princess can meet. So there we see this relationship to something that one is not carrying forth a responsibility. But then the law comes, which forces us to carry the responsibility. We find Vega in Capricorn, which is ruled by Saturn. So there is this higher law above us. So the somehow Vega is presenting the very powerful point, because it's on the second decanate of Capricorn, where we have the dolphin, which is jumping from the water. So there is the movement from the matter into the air, into the spirit or soul realm, and the law has to be fulfilled. Then also Vega is opposing Sirius, which is for us like the highest ruler of the law or expression of the law that we have to follow. And then Sirius is called the star of Mercury, and Mercury is related to Thot in Egypt, which is also the lawgiver. So we have in hidden ways in Sirius as in Vega, this, that the law which is written, what has to be followed. And then this 13th nerve, that was Harold telling us in one of the conferences, because I have not studied that part, but I remember, which is so mysterious, that the 13th nerve is that the same one, the how we are calling that, vagus, how do you pronounce that, what we were talking about, that nerve?
Either way, I mean, for our purposes at the moment,
So if that is related to that 13th meridian, that meridian was created, or that is how the science are looking at that, when the man or humanity learned to lie. And that is so interesting, because the lie is always related to how we are carrying forth the law. So there is, in that development, when we think that hierarchy 18 million years ago was strengthening the line, the separation between the these two, the duality, in order to develop humans' mind, that we can see more clearly what is right, what is wrong. And this this Vega, which is only, or this 13th meridian, is only activated then when we are singing. So there we have this line with the Vega, because Vega is also about the how we produce sound, how we bring words into singing, or we incantate, or we use those magical words. Yeah. So this relationship with this vagus nerve is also there, which is, I think, very interesting and longer study that one should be doing, because all these laws and how our relationship to law is related also to that nerve.
That's a lot of connections there, and some very interesting ones. Based on, you know, what you say, it's just reaffirming the association of Vega with the throat center of this cosmic logos, in which we are playing a heart center role. You know, the very first disciple in the Dyna books, his name was Herbert Adams, and he was a head of a whole Rosicrucian order. He was a powerful individual, and he was a third ray soul with a sixth ray personality and a fifth ray mind and a sixth ray astral body and a third ray physical body. And DK gave something to him which had application to everybody, because he told Mr. Adams, I wish I could think of his, you know, the very first disciple, what were his letters? You know, I can't remember exactly. But anyway, he told him what percentage of opening had occurred in each one of his chakras. And, you know, because he wanted to develop this man as a psychic, because the man was so super mental that he needed the balance of the higher type of psychic development. So his solar plexus was open 60%, his heart center about 40%, his throat center, was it 75%? And head center, not a lot, but significant. But the least of all was his ajna center, only 15%. And it's not those particular percentages that I'm after. It's the fact that every being has chakras or vortices from which a higher energy descends. And this is also true of a cosmic logos. Different stars within a cosmic logos are unfolded as chakras in different percentages. And I'm wondering if our local cosmic logos, sometimes called the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, I'm wondering whether its throat center is not quite developed, because the solar luminosities, you know, how bright these stars are compared with our sun, might have something to do with the openness of a chakra in a particular chakric system of one of these great beings. It's an analogy, but I think a useful one. I wonder if he is B, C, D. No, there's nothing there that I can maybe find, I'd like to be able to find this just to show you what's going on here, but I can't find it. There is a way to do it, however. I can, excuse me just for a second. I can look at a list of disciples that I have, and I can tell you how to look that up, you know. And I think, if you don't mind, I'm just going to take a minute to try to do that. So just bear with me. And here we go. Okay. And let's see. I have something here, something called, all right. Okay, I don't want to take your time, but let's just say, I'll try one more thing. And then if that doesn't work, it must be that I'm not supposed to go there right now. And I won't. But anyway, take out your book, Discipleship in the New Age, and the very first disciple discussed will show you percentages of chakras open. Now, this kind of thing applies to us as well. Each one of us has percentages of chakras open. And maybe we can give some kind of estimate, although we would need someone like DK to be able to tell us the truth of the matter. Maybe we can have some kind of estimate about how open the various chakras are. And we can compare that with solar luminosities of the neighboring planets, neighboring stars in a cosmic logos. Okay, well, mythology is a great source, and it's telling us all kinds of things about the cosmos and about ourselves. So thank you, Tuya, for that intervention. And Michael, you were going to go on and say we had our subject going in a certain way.
There's one more comment that I'm looking at that's directly related to the conversation that's been going on, and then Roz has a comment.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
G. Galanis writes, the vagus nerve is also known as a connector, the silver thread.
Silver thread. Uh-huh. Okay. That's sometimes the silver thread is connected with the sutratma, or the life thread. But the loosening of the silver cord has to do with basically the separation of the etheric body from the dense physical. And there are some biblical references along that same line. So, yeah, thanks for drawing our attention to that as well. Okay?
Okay, and Roz writes, and this goes back to your comments about Dustin Hoffman's role in Rain Man, the movie.
Yeah.
He writes, Greta Thunberg has mental health issues, and she too focuses obsessively on areas of life.
She is a driven individual, and you think really of somehow a high disciplic rank in a certain way. And obsession, yeah, does seem to be one of the, but it's in a, it means intensified focus, I think, in her case. She's so utterly passionate about her subject. And who knows, sometimes people come in deprived of certain faculties so that they can focus on something rather exclusively, almost to the point of fanaticism, but in the longer balance, it would not be seen as fanaticism. So thanks for that suggestion. Okay.
And Anne Veronica has helped us out. It's disciple BSD.
That's it.
Solar David on page 112. Head center 40%, ajna 15%, throat center 60%, heart center 50%, solar plexus 75%.
Yeah, that's as far as he goes. And I got some of them twisted around a little bit, but that's really interesting because the analogy holds good, I think, for chakric development of chains through their globes, of chakric development of schemes through their chains, and of chakric development of the solar system through the planetary schemes, which are like then the chains or the globes. They are chakric. And it tells you something about how fully they may be developed. Now, let me turn to something here, which I think is very interesting. Maybe I can find this in Tuya's. Okay. Here is one, here is another. This is the planetary scheme of Earth. And all of these chains are chakras. But notice that either information is being hidden by the conventionalized drawing of the Jupiter chain and the Neptune chain. The names may or may not mean something. Sometimes he throws us off the track. It's conventional. And since they are quite high chains, they may develop later. And the lower chains develop first. Now, what's the analogy in a human being? The analogy is that our lower chakras develop first. Now, it's the same over here, if I can. We will suspect, when looking at the schemes in our solar system, that these different schemes that are part of the greater esoteric Saturn develop first. Now, either information is being concealed here, which I'm sure it is anyway, under Neptune and Uranus, or there is not yet a full unfoldment of those higher chakras, just the way it would be for a human being. Now, you know, when we start talking about the unfoldment of our head center and maybe of our heart center, those often lag behind the throat center development. And under the throat center come all these other schemes, planetary schemes. So we develop in terms of unfoldment of chakras from the lower to the higher. And that's why I think we would suspect that lower numbers will be found the higher we go. Now, in the case of BSD, those initials stand for something, and I can get that to you, you know. But it is BSD. Thank you. Page 112 or so, I think. This was missing, the sight aspect, only 15%. And so DK wanted to intervene and say, we need to develop you as a higher psychic in order to create this proper balance between the chakras. Because as you can see, what was it, 75% solar plexus, was that it? 40% crown? And 60% throat, was that it?
That's correct.
And heart was what? 40 again, or what was it?
Heart, 50%.
50, okay, 50, okay. Okay, well, every one of us has our percentages. And the master will tell us if it's necessary, or we can make some speculation concerning that, which might be interesting to follow. And just carry the analogy on up, and then the Soto Logos, let's say, in this case, looking at its whole system, may not take development in perfect order. The Soto Logos, depending upon the progress of the particular planetary logos involved, may have to intervene for the sake of balancing development. There was almost, as I've told you, or read anyway, a solar logoic intervention in our planetary life during the First World War. It didn't have to happen, but it almost happened. Okay. Is that it?
And then Anne Veronica asks, so when you enchant and you want to activate a specific ray, you have to pass it through the vagus nerve?
No, that's not a question I can really answer, but I do know that singing, you know, according to my colleague Harold, who's sort of studied a heart and throat connection, that singing is an unusually effective method of activation. And I really need him for the more complete explanation. Tuya was driving at that, but I wouldn't be able to answer that yet. Maybe talking to Harold would be the way to do it. Let's see, if you want to write him, which I think you could do, you know. What is his email address to you? Do you have Harold's email address?
I think it is hgmoses@gmail.com.
Okay, that sounds right. Not just
that, that is correct.
hgmoses, all one word, hgmoses@gmail.com. And I know he has a little bit of published material on that particular relationship. It is really, really quite interesting. And it does give us something about the virtue of singing. Now, you know, we've lost the notes. If you go to the third formula, which has to do with being and time and space, it's called the seed of all philosophies. There were certain mantras chanted forth on certain notes in a certain rhythm, and we've lost all that, and that has to be, I think, returned to us, you know, when the time is right, because it would render the mantras effective, where right now all we have is the meaning. Of course, we are shifting into the world of meaning, and so it does make sense that, so, you know, some people could simply take the word, the color, the rhythm, whatever, and not know what it all means. But we also need the particular spiritual numerals involved. And they have been lost in the night of time, but can be restored. So,
Michael,
yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, dear. Yeah.
About the rhythm, how very crucial thing it is in relationship with the elementals. I once was meeting with one professor in University of Helsinki who was investigating voodoo in Africa, and he told how he was in whatever tribe it was, and there was a few others from different universities. They were involved, or they were invited in one something what was happening in one of the villages, and they saw that how the drumming was started to move dead bodies. That is documented, that has been filmed, and I don't know about music, but does something tells for you, Michael, because you understand something like something dash 16 division of rhythm. I don't know. I think it was something like 16, something so rapid. The drumming was so rapid that you cannot see fingers moving. Those drummers are unbelievable.
Yeah.
They are like in some kind of trance. And I think that is when we think about the seventh ray, which is also the ray of the rhythm, why the teaching is so much kept in secret, because of this rhythmic relationship to little elementals who start to function if you know the code into their lives.
Okay.
And that's why that could be calling those kinds of forces which are not meant to be anymore.
Yes, we could. And Vulcan is involved here too. The whole idea of a systemic law of vibration and the hammer and the drum. And related to this are the meters of poetry. Iambic, trochaic, anapestic, whatever all those meters are called. You know, we've pretty much reduced it to 4 meters, which had a very occult early use, and there are others, I suppose, in the esoteric drumming schools, you know, like we have, you know, iambic, da-da, 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 da-da. We have a meter, da-da, da-da, da-da. Mm. We have another meter, da-da-dum, da-da-dum, da-da-dum. And another meter, dum, da-da-dum, da-da-dum. See, those four, and, you know, I don't know all the names, but anapestic, trochaic, whatever. And iambic is the one that is the Elizabethan poetry in Shakespeare is written in iambs. That is a reduction of all of the occultism that was known in the ancient Vedic tradition. Mm-hmm. And I believe there are four Vedas and the rhythms associated with the presentation of knowledge. So if you have the pitch, the color, and the rhythm, exactly, those are the occult numerals that we need really to convey or bring to life the magical process.
Yeah, you know, I really think about that, what DK has been saying and asking us to be rhythmic in our work. Yeah. Because he's criticizing of aspirants that it is on and off, on and off. And that's why disciples should have the rhythmic work continuously going, because I think that this is the higher beat over those lower beats, which are still keeping alive this kind of unconscious life and the very low lives what we are not supposed to be anymore dealing with.
And he talks about, like you say, imposing a new rhythm upon an old rhythm. He talks about that constantly. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Okay, there's so much in occultism, everybody, and, you know, there's so much knowledge. It's just a question of when we need it, how we access it, and how we use it. And generally, we are protected from too easy an access that would lead to misuse and much delay. and destruction. But all of this will unfold as our motives unfold properly. Okay, I think that must be it then.
I would just like to add, the study of laws is quite important and interesting. You referred to the three major cosmic laws being economy, attraction, and synthesis. And those are all lumped under footnote B as the laws of thought. So I consider the laws of thought as a major cosmic law, or as a greater cosmic law, along with the law of Akasha and the law of rhythm. The law of rhythm governs all processes of nature.
Okay. Interesting.
And then there's minor cosmic laws before we get down into the systemic laws and the laws of the soul and so forth. So,
what did you come up with? 400 something laws?
Within Blavatsky's works and Bailey's works and Agni Yoga, there's over 400 law names. That doesn't mean there's 400 laws, because some of them are just using different names for the same law. But it's really fascinating.
Yeah. Well, look, friends, we're into what I would call synthetic studies. You know, when we study a treatise on cosmic fire, everything comes into it in meticulous detail, in meticulous entirety. So, you know, we just proceed filling in the relationships until pure reason and straight knowledge are developed. That would be our goal, and it's one of the major goals of the coming sixth root race, the development of the Buddhic plane as far as humanity is concerned. So all of these items of information, okay, we're going to correlate them the best we can, and it will lead to an ever more articulated picture of the relationships in the systems in which we live and move and have our being. Okay, friends, that has to be it, because we're a bit over. And let's close. Thank you, everybody, for your input. Very interesting. Many interesting points made. And since everything is related to everything else, anything is fair game. Great invocation.
Would you change your screen share, please?
You always catch me on that, don't you? All right. One day I'm going to learn. All right. There we go. Almost. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. from the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everybody. We'll get this out to you tonight. We have Glamour. And we're swirly in glamour these days, socially, politically, religiously. So please join us if you can at 5 p.m. GMT. And it will be a go-to webinar meeting. And meanwhile, we'll continue with our ASK programs on the evening of Saturday, the Soul of Nations, Destiny of the Nations, and on Sunday in the evening here in Europe, the Attracting Finances for Hierarchical Purposes. Appreciating your presence, lots of love and goodwill and many blessings from the whole communications team. So I'll stop the recording, and then Michael, you can get us out of here. Okay? And thank you all, and bye-bye.